I'd like to turn to the book of Isaiah, chapter 6, very familiar passage of Scripture. Isaiah, chapter 6, we'd like to read the first 8 verses. In the year that King Uzziah died, I, which would be Isaiah, saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had 6 wings. With twain or 2 he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried. And the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I'm undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth, and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. Also, in addition to, I heard the voice of the Lord, saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me. By way of background to the book of Isaiah and to our text, we know that following the death of Solomon, Israel was divided into 2 kingdoms. It was the northern kingdom, throughout the Old Testament referred to as Israel. There is the southern kingdom, throughout the Old Testament referred to as Judah. Isaiah began his ministry near the end of Uzziah's reign. Uzziah was the 10th king of the kingdom of Judah. And then Isaiah continued his ministry. Again, in Isaiah 1, verse 1, we see this. He continued his ministry through the reigns of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Isaiah ministered during the last years of the northern kingdom, that is Israel, and its subsequent fall to Assyria. But he ministered to the southern kingdom, that is Judah. He ministered in a time when the southern kingdom, or Judah, was in great danger, because they were following the very paths that led to the destruction of the northern kingdom. They, like the northern kingdom, were not taking the prophets of God seriously. They were forsaking the old paths. They were going further and further and further from God, dismissing God from their thoughts and dismissing God from their lives and putting other things in the place of God, busying themselves in the pursuits of earthly things, placing more and more esteem upon the fleshly, placing more and more esteem upon the worldly, and really we're just becoming desensitized to the things of God. And as you read Isaiah 1, we're not going to go there tonight for time's sake, but you see that he ministered during a very corrupt time. It was a time when religion was popular. Religion was outward and was not spiritual. And he ministered basically during a time of spiritual formality. But as you read through the book of Isaiah, it is very apparent that Isaiah seemed to always maintain a passion and a zeal in the service and in the cause of the Lord. Verse 8 of our text ends with Isaiah saying to the Lord, "Here am I, send me." Those were words spoken in surrender and in submission to God. They were words of willingness. They were words of readiness to do the work of the Lord. They are the words of one who is available to the Lord. They are the words of one who sees the service of the Lord as a priority in his life. No doubt they are words of love. They are words of devotion. I believe he spoke those words with great passion. I believe he spoke those words with a great amount of zeal. "Here am I. Send me." Those aren't meaningless words. Those are words of sincerity. Those are words of purpose. We want tonight to look at what led to Isaiah making that statement. More importantly, what led to the spirit behind the statement, "Here am I, send me." I want to speak on the foundation of a right spirit toward the service of the Lord. Because we, like Isaiah, live and are called by God to serve in a time that is godless. Everything is secular about our culture. And one of the greatest needs of our day is spirit-filled men and women who are willing to stand before God and from their heart be able to say, "Here am I, send me." No other questions asked, just, "Here am I, send me." To live in such closeness, to live in such fellowship with God, to enjoy such personal communion with God that we're unable to hold those words back. "Here am I, send me." Well, we read here in Isaiah 6, and we've preached from this many times, but what Isaiah saw, what Isaiah felt, what Isaiah experienced had a life-shaking impact upon him. And it is what led to him saying, "Here am I, send me." This is more than singing, "I surrender all. I surrender all." I mean, when you think about that song, and you sing that song, everyone ought to be repenting. This is more than just words. These are words of great passion, great zeal. What he saw, what he heard, what he experienced, what he felt, left a lasting impression upon his person. And that's what we need this evening. We need the reality of what Isaiah saw. We need the reality of what Isaiah felt and what he experienced. So verse 8 is that statement, "Here am I, send me." We want to see what led to that. First of all, Isaiah saw, he felt, and he experienced, this is all personal, he experienced the Lord. Several things under that heading. Number one, he saw, he felt, and he experienced the Lord's position. Notice what it says there in verse 1. It was the year that King Uzziah died. And he said, "I saw," that is, I personally saw also, in addition to other things that he saw, the Lord. Now notice, it is the Lord, capital L, and then small case letters. The Hebrew word Adonai. I saw the Lord. I saw Adonai. Adonai means master. I saw the master. Adonai means the strong one, the firm one. I saw the master. I saw the strong one. I saw the firm one, or the sure one. Then notice, it says, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne. So he sees Adonai sitting. This is the year that King Uzziah died. Everything has been turned upside down. And there is the Lord sitting. A position of peace. A position of tranquility. It is a position of dwelling and abiding. He says, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne. He's at peace. And he's upon a throne. A throne, of course, speaks of authority. It speaks of rule. It speaks of dominion. Notice what else it says. I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up. He is saying, I saw the Lord, and I saw him in peace, with authority, with rule. He is above all things. He is higher than all things. He's greater than all things. Isaiah saw, he felt, and he experienced the sovereignty of God. What is expressed there in that first verse, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne high and lifted up. That is the sovereignty of God. Now notice verse 5. He says, the last part of the verse, for mine eyes have seen the King. That's sovereignty. The Lord. Notice there, all caps, Jehovah. I saw the King, Jehovah. And he is the Lord, or Jehovah of hosts. That is, he rules all things. We need to see God in his sovereignty. We need to feel the sovereignty of God. We need to experience the sovereignty of God in such a way that it leaves a lasting impression upon us. That it leaves a mark upon us. So he saw He felt and he experienced the sovereignty of God. We see also in verse 1 that he saw, he felt, and he experienced God's glory. And his train filled the temple. Now, the longer the train on a king's robe, that means he had more dignity. It was emblematic of a king's dignity. And his train filled the temple. It was a thing of beauty. And I believe here it represents the glory of God. Isaiah personally saw the dignity, the magnificence, and the glory of the Lord. And he says it filled the temple. That is, his robe, his dignity, his beauty, his glory was so immense that it filled the temple. Now, the fact that it filled the temple and the fact that Isaiah was in the temple means that it literally surrounded Isaiah. So what we have here is Isaiah is surrounded by the dignity. He is surrounded by the beauty. He is surrounded by the glory of the Lord. Now, if you're surrounded by something, you see it. But you not only see it, you feel it. Isaiah not only saw the Lord, he felt the Lord because it filled the temple where he was. He experienced the Lord. We need that today in such a way that it leaves a lasting mark upon us. We see also from verses 2 through 4, we see there were these seraphims. Doesn't tell us how many. People assume there were three because of three holy, holy, holy. But that's quite an assumption. But there were these seraphims. Each one had six wings. Two wings covered their faces, two wings covered their feet. Two wings, they flew. And they're saying, holy, holy, holy. That is, Adonai, the exalted one, the sovereign one, the one who's upon this throne, high and lifted up. He's pure. He's sinless. He's perfectly righteous. This is sinless seraphim. Seraphim have never sinned. Saying, holy, holy, holy. Shows that God is set apart from all else. Now the volume of the seraphim as they cry, holy, 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 is of such magnitude, we read in verse 4, that it shakes the doorposts of the house of God. So Isaiah saw the seraphim. He heard the seraphim. And as the volume was so great, the doorposts began to shake. And I believe that Isaiah felt and he sensed the awesome power of God, of what was transpiring before him. It not only shook the doorpost of the house of God, it shook the very being of Isaiah. And I don't believe he ever got over it. We need the Spirit of God to come down in such a way that it shakes us. That it shakes our very being. We need to experience what Isaiah experienced, so much so that it leaves a lasting mark upon us. Oh, how many times we leave the house of God and there's no mark upon us. There ought to be. I mean, we've met with the Lord. There ought to be a lasting mark upon us. It ought to at least get us through to Wednesday. But it ought to leave a lasting mark upon us. He also saw, felt, and experienced God's surrounding presence. Again, his train filled the temple. We read in verse 4 that the temple, the house was filled with smoke. Filled with the train of his robe. Filled with his glory. Filled with smoke. So what you have here is Isaiah is experiencing the engulfing presence of a sovereign, glorious, and holy God. And it left an impression upon him. It left a mark upon him. So Isaiah saw, felt, and experienced the Lord. Also, secondly, Isaiah saw, felt, and experienced what true service to the Lord involved. You know, a lot of people will say they want to serve the Lord. The problem is they do not have a clue what true service to God involves. I don't believe any of us fully know what true service to God involves. But I believe Isaiah saw that day in the seraphim what true service to God involves. Verse 2, the seraphim, six wings. With two of them, they covered their face, they covered their feet. I believe that's humility. These seraphim before the glory of God, serving God, covering their face and their feet. That's a symbol of humility. It also shows that they were trying to hide their own beauty. Seraphim are beautiful. I mean, these weren't demons. These are seraphim. These are angels. They're beautiful. But before God, they hide their own beauty. Because they realize it's not about us. It's about the one who sits on that throne. And that's what true service involves, is coming to the realization that it is not about us. People wouldn't get upset about the things they get upset about if they just realize, hey, it's not about you. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's not about any of us. It's about him. And we often lose sight of that. But I believe what Isaiah saw concerning the Lord left a lasting mark upon him. I also believe what Isaiah saw concerning those seraphim left a lasting mark upon him also. Thirdly, he saw, he felt, and he experienced his own self. Verse 5. Then said I, Notice that first word. Then. That speaks of order. Then. It speaks of order, but it also speaks of a definite and marked result of what has transpired. Then, after I had seen God, after I had felt God, after I had experienced God, and after I saw those seraphim, then, there's an order. We many times get things out of order. So after he saw, felt, and experienced the sovereignty, the glory, and the presence of God, the holiness of God, after he'd seen what true service involves, then I said, or then said I, woe is me, for I am undone, left and forsaken. He saw, he felt, and he experienced what he deserved. I believe all of us, we have all had times where we have truly felt what we deserve. But we have this terrible tendency to get over it. We have this terrible tendency to forget what we deserve. And I believe we need to always keep that in mind if we're going to truly serve the Lord. Always be mindful of what we deserve. The word woe is, of course, a word expressive of misery. It's a word expressive of sorrow, and distress, and despondency, and despair. It's a word expressive of regret. And gloom. It is also a word that expresses that we are deserving of the wrath and the judgment of God. It is also expressed in that word undone. So as a result of what he has seen, as a result of what he has felt and experienced, Isaiah felt unworthy of the blessings of God. Not only unworthy of the blessings of God, but worthy of the wrath of God. We have been delivered from the wrath of God, you and I that are saved, but we're still deserving of it. And we always will be. Always will we be deserving of the wrath of God. If there was any feeling in Isaiah of self-importance or self-righteousness or self-sufficiency, it was undone. Woe is me, for I am undone. If he had any self-importance at all, if he had any sense of self-righteousness or self-sufficiency, it's all gone now. And how did he get there? By being in the presence of the Lord. Seeing those seraphim covering their faces, covering their feet. You see, in the service of God, there is absolutely no place for the mindset of self-importance. There is absolutely no place for the mindset of self-righteousness or self-sufficiency. That mindset has no place in the service of God. None. And that's why we need to Stay in the presence of God. Because it's in the presence of God that we realize I'm unworthy. It's in the presence of God that we realize that we're deserving of the wrath of God. It's when we get our eyes on others and we compare ourselves to those who we feel are inferior to us spiritually. That's how we develop self-righteousness. But you stay in the presence of God, you'll never get self-righteous. You'll never get proud. You'll never feel a sense of self-importance and self-sufficiency. You'll always be humbled in the presence of the Lord. And the truth is, if we're going to serve God, self needs to be undone. I mean, it needs to be undone. It needs to be rooted up. And how does this happen? It comes as a result of feeling the gravity of our sin. And when we feel the gravity of our sin, we begin to feel what we deserve as sinners. It comes from, we feel the gravity of our sin by seeing and by feeling and by experiencing the holiness of God. You'll never feel the gravity of your sin comparing yourself to another sinner. You never will. You'll only feel the gravity of it. You'll only feel the filth of it when it's in the presence of perfection. So Isaiah's experienced that, and now he begins to experience himself. And he realizes that he's unworthy. He realizes that he's worthy of the wrath of God. He also saw, felt, and experienced the vileness of self. Notice verse 5 again. Then said I, woe is me, for I am undone. Why does he say, woe is me, and I'm undone? Because. He's going to tell us why. Because I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. He begins to feel the filth of ungodliness, of unrighteousness. He feels that he's infected with sin, and we all are. We are infected with this disease called sin. And there is no worse disease amongst mankind. The disease of sin. There is no disease more filthy. There is no disease more foul and more vile than sin. And he says, I am a man of unclean lips. And then he went on to say, he also realized that this was true of others also. He says, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. But notice the order. The order is important. He starts, he does not start with, I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. That's not where he starts. He starts with, woe is me. He starts with his own sin. He says, woe is me, for I am undone. For I am a man of unclean lips. We need to see, we need to feel, we need to experience this so much to the degree that it leaves a lasting mark. I deserve the wrath of God because I am an impure sinner. I will always deserve the wrath of God. Isaiah experienced himself. Fourthly, the order is significant here. It's the order of salvation. We see he sees the Lord. He feels the depravity of self. And then he saw and he felt and he experienced the grace and the mercy of the Lord. Notice verse 6 and verse 7. Then, there it is again, there's an order. There's a very definite order being followed here. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me. Unto me. Came unto me. This is something that Isaiah personally experienced. This was very real to Isaiah. There may have been other people there. But Isaiah did not say that the seraphim came unto us. That's not what he said. He said, came unto me. Came unto me. And notice what happened. He had a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he, the seraphim, laid it upon my mouth. I am a man of unclean lips. He laid it upon my uncleanness. He laid it upon my mouth and said, so he heard also. He felt, he saw, he felt, he heard, lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. There was personal contact with heaven. This was real. Personal contact with heaven. Isn't it amazing today that we say that we've worshiped God and we do so without contact with heaven? Well, that's impossible. If you worship God, you have to have contact with heaven. There was contact with heaven. And it was personal. The seraphim came unto me. Heaven made contact with an undeserving and filthy sinner. As a child of God, you cannot have personal contact with heaven and remain irreverent. You can't do it. You cannot have personal contact with heaven and be defiant. You cannot have personal contact with heaven and be apathetic. And be rebellious. And be cold. No, contact with heaven does away with all of those things. What God had done for Isaiah was by grace and mercy. Because he said, woe is me. But now his iniquity has been purged. And this was very real to Isaiah. Think about it today. You and I are saved, loved by God, chosen by God. Chosen by God before the foundation of the world. Predestinated by God. Accepted by God. Redeemed by God. Forgiven. Justified. Reconciled, delivered. We can go on and on. These are all the result of heaven making contact with us and we're undeserving. Now, if that doesn't leave a mark, nothing will. That should leave a lasting mark upon us. The blessing of salvation. That brings us to our last point. Isaiah saw, felt, and experienced, or saw and felt the importance of God's cause. We see that he has seen and felt and experienced God's sovereignty, God's glory, God's holiness, God's presence. He has seen and experienced what true service to God involves. He has seen and felt and experienced what he deserves from God. Woe is me. He has seen and felt and experienced his own uncleanness. I'm a man of unclean lips. And now he has experienced contact from heaven through the grace and the mercy of God. And we come to verse 8, and he says also, that is in addition to all of these things we've already mentioned, I heard the voice of the Lord. I heard the voice of the Lord. He's now in a condition to hear the Lord in a special way. I heard the voice of the Lord. But notice, verse 8, it's not merely heard the voice of the Lord. You can hear a voice. But he also heard what it said. He heard what the Lord said. You can hear a voice without hearing what was said. But Isaiah heard the voice of the Lord. And then notice that next word. Saying. That is, I not only heard the voice, I heard what it said. He heard God. And he heard what God was saying. Oh, we need to hear God. More importantly, we need to hear what God is saying. We need to hear what he's saying. And that will leave a mark upon us. That has an immediate effect upon us. He is saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? When Isaiah heard that voice, and when he heard what the Lord said, Isaiah felt the significance, the seriousness, and the urgency of the Lord's cause. Whom shall I send? And who will go for us? And Isaiah feels an urgency. And now with a heart filled with gratitude because of what has transpired. Without asking for any specifics, whom shall I send? Who will go for us? Isaiah didn't say, Lord, where are you going to send them to? Just said, who shall I send? Who will go for us? With a heart filled with gratitude and passion, Isaiah said, here am I. send me. Here am I. Send me. Well, Isaiah, what about everything else? What about your family? Here am I. Send me. Well, Isaiah, what about your homeland? What about your familiar surroundings? What about all these things, Isaiah? Here am I. Send me. Because everything up to this point has been real. Isaiah, without giving it any thought, says, Lord, here am I. Please, please send me. It's as if he's saying, I'm aware of my family. I'm aware of my homeland. And I'm aware of my familiar surroundings. But Lord, here am I. Send me. He felt the importance of the cause of Christ. Remember David? They tried to discourage him from going up against Goliath. And David simply asked in innocence, is there not a cause? Isaiah or David felt the urgency of a cause. And it is time for God's people to feel the urgency of God's cause. And this isn't something that we can just stir up. This comes as a result of being in the presence of God. This comes as a result of realizing what true service involves, that it's not about us. It's all about Him. This comes as a result of seeing ourselves what we deserve and seeing ourselves as filthy sinners and experiencing the grace and mercy of God and experiencing contact from heaven. And when that happens, you can't help yourself. You just say, Lord, here am I. Send me. Without that happening, you might say, here am I, send me. But then after a while, you start to think about it. And now you're in trouble. Because now you think, well, you know, this isn't a good time for me to leave my family. You know, any other time, Lord, but this just isn't a good time. That's what people do. And, you know, that this isn't a good time for me to leave my job or whatever. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. When is a good time? When is a good time? The answer to that question is, I mean, the way people would answer that question, when everything in my life lines up, it'll be time. Remember the seraphim? It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about Him. Now is the time to serve God. Right now. Right now is the time to say, here am I, send me. But it won't be real. And it will not last unless we experience what led up to, here am I. Send me. I'm afraid many times we feel the emotion of a service or whatever. You feel guilt. And people, I just want to serve God, they'll say. I'm willing to do anything. But by the time they get out to the parking lot, that's all changed. And if they make it through the parking lot, they probably won't make it through the evening before it changes. And if they make it through the evening, they've gone further than most folks. But somewhere along the line, unless they've experienced what Isaiah experienced, trouble's going to come, a problem's going to come, and everything's out the window. This needs to be real. We need to be in the presence of Almighty God. We need to be in the presence of a holy God. And I'm not doubting the sincerity of people. I believe we've all done it. People have been very sincere. They mean it. I want to serve the Lord. I'm willing to give them everything. And they're sincere. But unless these things have happened, it's not going to last. It's not going to last. And the way that we serve God is to remain in the presence of God. Meet with God every day. Spend some time in the holiness of God, in the presence of His holiness. And as soon as you do that, woe is me. Woe is me. And then that God would, when we realize what we are, when we realize what we deserve, that God would let us do anything in His service will thrill our soul. Because we realize what we deserve. I believe these things are foundational to truly serving the Lord. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song.